Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com.
Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Motoshami to talk about mortgage rates and what the Fed is going to do next. Logan, welcome back to the podcast.
Happy Friday, Sarah, and we're going to talk about something that might initially scare people, but what if the Fed doesn't cut rates in 2024?
Oh, I cannot believe we are having this conversation. I cannot believe it. I thought this was the year and the time we were going to be talking about rates going down. So, and maybe that's still the case. I want to get your take. So set up the whole environment here, Logan. Why are we having this conversation after the Fed said they would be cutting rates?
A few podcasts ago, we talked about, how Wall Street got some of the rate and recession story wrong, so they're frustrated. And there was another famous Wall Street person, again, that came out today and said there should be no rate cuts and that the economy is growing too strong and we should not be cutting rates. And the reason I did that podcast, or we did that podcast, it was to get people ready because the recession isn't here. And then a lot of calls are wrong. Then the 10-year yield has fallen from, let's say, 5% all the way down to 380, and it's, today is at 420. And I think there's a growing frustration from Wall Street people that were so in on the 2022 recession and so convinced about the 2023 recession. And then they realize that you kind of need the housing market to break, like, or construction workers. And the way to do that is to get the 10-year yield up high enough that the Fed stays restrictive enough and that something breaks and we go into the recession. And then they don't care about, saying what they did about rate cuts. So we had a very interesting week here, Sarah, because we had the PCE inflation data. And I sit here and I could tell you this with a straight face. The 12-month PCE headline data is running at 2.4%. 2.4. McFly, hello. 2.4. So the 3 months, 6 months picked up. So if we take an average, a collective average of 3, 6, 12-month PCE, 2.4, 2.8, depending on core and headline. When the Fed talked about they wanted to have the Fed funds rate kind of mirror that, we're very restrictive today, right? So the whole thing with me is paper, rock, scissors, labor data, over inflation. So in that context, now that we're here, Bostick of the Fed said, we have to keep rates higher for longer, we can't ease. And I think we're at the phase right now to where the Fed we have three rate cuts coming, right? And the inflation data that was hot with the CPI is starting to get ridiculed because there's some interesting rent factors that doesn't look right to a lot of the nerds out there. So when we're going to hear a lot of people now start to talk about they shouldn't cut rates, I'm telling you this, they're all people that want to see the recession. So the bigger the talking heads out there doing this, remember that there's a lot of things that are happening right now that are different than, let's say, 2022. Job openings data, so the quit percentage is down pre-COVID. The hires data is down pre-COVID. The wage growth data is now down from the peak. It's been trending lower for some time. The apartment boom in America is over. Once those backlogs are done, those people will lose their jobs. And the existing home sales market is still in the third calendar year of the lowest sales demand ever. So there's a lot of things that are in the economy that aren't what we would consider booming. But I just think that when you start to hear people pushing back on rate cuts, and three rate cuts is nothing, considering where the growth rate of inflation is and where it's going, let's be mindful that these are mostly people that want to see a recession. So I don't believe that's the case. I am not a Fed pivot person too. I am not, to the life of me, have said the Fed has not pivoted. Three rate cuts is still restrictive. The 10-year yield being here today, still restrictive. So we're going to get rate cuts. But even with that starting to get priced in, mortgage rates are still above 7%. The 10-year yield is still above 4%.
So we did have some, you know, obviously people with quotes around them, people can say whatever they want. It's when Fed presidents come out and say things that we pay attention, or when the Fed itself. So do you feel like the Fed is, you know, waffling on whether they'll do rate cuts?
I believe that the Fed wouldn't have cut rates if the growth rate of inflation didn't fall as fast as it did. And it did, and it fell with an economy that's growing above trend, and the labor market's still firm in the sense that we're not losing jobs yet. And I think there's a little bit of, they don't understand what happened here. The economy should have been much weaker. So with that backdrop, they have way too many people like myself who said you don't need to create a job loss recession, right? So they have to talk about rate cuts, because the closer we get to 2% on the PCE data, headline or core, and they haven't started cutting it, it's the risk of overdoing it, and then they go into, oh, the Fed always overdoes it, and they want a recession. And the people that were criticizing that would say, hey, listen, we said you should have been cutting. And I would tell you this, one of the Fed presidents, Goolsbee, was saying that our job is not to cut rates right when we get to 2%. Our job is to kind of get ahead of the curve. You know, he's just one president. I don't think he's even a voting president. So in that context, even three rate cuts this year is still, to me, restrictive. It's not going into accommodative stance. So I'm hoping, I have always had that line in the sand, 323,000 four-week moving average jobless claims. I'm hoping we don't get into the real pivot discussion when we get there, because you should get ahead of the curve. Because I don't believe in the theory that you could have a reacceleration of inflation like we saw in the 70s. Of course, I've been pounding the fist on that for some time. So it's, well, we'll get the three rate cuts. But again, you know, the 10-year yield getting below 3.80%, it's most likely going to need weakness in labor data, or the Fed actually really starting to talk dovish or kind of pivoting. I don't think the 10-year yield really breaks under 3.37 unless the labor market's breaking. So right now, as of right now, so 10 years at 4.20, mortgage rates, I think 7.08%. That kind of looks right with the economic data out there, because I still think they're in a very restrictive stance.
So, you know, distilling that down, if you're in mortgage or real estate, maybe 7% is what we've got. You don't see it going much higher, but you also don't see it going much lower until the Fed starts lowering rates.
Well, if the labor data gets softer, like jobless claims data starts to perk up noticeably, the 10-year yield has shown us this. And I think this goes back to what happened in 2022 to 2023. The 10-year yield came all the way down to, I think intraday it was like 3.20. We had 5.99% rates. And the Fed was still hiking. That wasn't, you know, we had that big move in mortgage rates with lower rates, with rate hikes still in the cycle. So always remember the macro data, Fed expected, these things kind of run the 10-year yield. And that explains why mortgage rates fell. But the economic data is firmer, and there's no banking crisis in a bigger sense right now. So the 10-year yield is holding kind of at bay at these key technical levels. And I think for all of you that follow the tracker data, you know, the last few weeks we've highlighted that, you know, we're going to be in a very tight channel here. We don't want to break above 4.34%. No, no, no. I still hate the fact that we're still up here, and one market mistake and all hell could break loose. So you can kind of, the Fed can massage the talking points out there, but at some point, like we've said for some time, they're going to have to just endure and want to live and go on and get back to living life, especially in the housing market. If mortgage rates got down to 6 to 5.5%, nothing's going to change on the inflation data or anything. You know, it's just that people are going to start buying more homes, and we don't have this scarring data line that we have, this economy growing above trend, but we have existing home sales at all-time lows in sales, in my mind, because we have more people. So hopefully, as the year goes on, this becomes more evident by Fed presidents talking about it, And we don't have to rely on weakness on the economic data front to get there, because obviously we have a lot of people that want to get back into the market, start buying homes. They just need lower rates on that side.
So you, as always, are looking at jobless claims. And I think it's interesting, every time we do a new home sales story, you break out like what the construction data looks like, because like what's under construction, what hasn't even been started. Because for you, it's not just interesting for that, but the whole, what you just said about the construction labor really influences that jobless claims.
Yeah, you know, I would tell you this. I had a very interesting debate with a Wall Street person that's notoriously known for being probably a little bit more bearish than others. And he was always talking about the inverted yield curve. And the inverted yield curve is part of my six recession red flags. I look at it as more of a duration cycle. But one of the reasons why I wanted to highlight November 9th, 2022, is that if the builder's confidence goes up, that usually means they feel like they could sell more homes, and that usually means permits start to pick up. And that's what we saw. But we already have, at least how I look at it, two-thirds of the housing market is in a recession. The apartment boom is over. The existing home sales are still at record lows. The single-family permits are holding up, and the builders are just doing whatever they can to sell that. You lose that side of the economic cycle data, and it looks like every single authentic recession that we've always had with the inverted yield curve. So to me, again, you're playing with fire that you don't need to. And you can get to this other side by just starting to talk a little bit less hawkish, going into the neutral stance. And then if you need to do what the point is, not to get to the accommodative stance that you have to lower rates faster than you want. You just want to move it over to the other side. And this is why the frustration I have with the Fed members is that it appears that 6% mortgage rates, they feel like that's a problem. That's a problem for them in the United States of people getting, buying homes, having sex, having kids, more stuff, right? That's inflationary. It doesn't necessarily need to. We had the longest economic and job expansion ever recorded in history at 3.25% mortgage rates to 5%, and we never had breakaway inflation. So let's be a little bit more mindful of history, right? Now, so the supply chains are back to somewhat normal for the majority. Are there issues with pirates attacking ships and stuff? Yes, but I mean, we have to live our lives on our own terms and not be dictated by terrorist groups trying to, you know, talk to Wall Street to prop up more. And we even have people talking about rate hikes. That's where we're at right now, that some people are talking, when's the next rate hike? So I think it'd be more clever if the Fed just starts to move to that side to get all that noise out of here. Because it wouldn't be like, I'm dead serious. If I had Powell, Kashkari,
Man, does
anybody see the movie The Mummy? I'm the Magi on that one. Okay. So I would just say, if the 10-year yield is below at 3.37 and 3.80, and mortgage spreads are normal, and we have, you know, 5.25 to 6.25 mortgage rate, is that a problem for you as a president of a Federal Reserve? Do you think that will create breakaway inflation? They're going to give some Mickey Mouse answer. I'm going to say, no, it's not, you know, because we had the housing bubble boom. Home sales are booming. Construction was booming. Home prices were boom. Inflation was not that much, right? So we want to get off of this 70s versus pandemic inflation and go, pandemic's over, forget it, 70s, and let's move forward out here. And I can understand the frustration by a lot of Wall Street people. They didn't get the recession they wanted, and now the Fed can't cut rates. It can't cut rates. Economy's going, which is clever on their part. It's clever. See, I always say the crazy people out there are like, we're in a recession, they cut rates. No, why? Oh, you want a recession? Yes, of course. That's who you are. But the smarter people are like, oh, the economy is really good. We can't cut rates. That at least is a coherent thing. So we got that today. This is Friday that we're talking about. And by the way, the 10-year yield on Friday, hello, nuts, right? One ISM data, boy, we go up to almost 430. Another one, bad one, comes down to 421. Fed's president's Remember this channel we've talked about for the last month now? When it starts to get itchy, right? It's they're nervous. So think about a bond market trader or a computer. It's like, oh my God, that headline, I got to sell. Oh my God, that headline, I got to buy. You know, they don't know when that next big move is. So the next big move is either 434 to 5% or 434 is like 4.25%. We get down to 380 again. In bond market world, that's a lot of money. So if it seemed a little crazy on Friday morning, it's that itchy fingers we always talk about and headlines start to move things. That's when you know there's a lot of uncertainty out there in bond land. And again, all I care about is a 10-year yield, mortgage rates. Everything else is not my cup of tea.
I think, you know, it reminds me of when Powell went on 60 Minutes and you wrote up something for us. You watched that. I watched that. We talked about it several times. And he used the word cautious, right? Like, we want to be cautious. We want to be careful. And but he said, you know, it's that balancing act. They don't want to be on either side too much. They don't want to cut too soon, but they also don't want to be like, oh, we waited too long. And it's like, okay, here we go. We're there.
It's the fundamental belief that if you're afraid to live, this is why I always say, you know what the Fed reminds me of? Sarah, do you remember the movie Footloose?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, well, all the Fed presidents are John Lithgow's character. Nobody can dance. Nobody can dance.
Taking away our fun. Come on.
Nobody can dance. Nobody can have sex and have kids and buy homes. No, it's inflation, right? You know? So we're at this stage where either you're going to have this weak Mickey Mouse talk left and right about, maybe should we, maybe not. I'm all good here. Let's go. Pandemic's over. People need to start living their lives. So again, I don't want the Fed to pivot when jobless claims are at 323,000, right? And inherently, they should think this also as well. Yeah, they should like, yeah, that's too late. And then you might get rates lower than you want and you have no control. The bond market takes it in. So it's just in that context, just land the plane, Jay. Come on. It's a layup. It's a layup. The only people that want you to mess up are the Wall Street people that hate your guts, right? You know?
Hope he takes your words here, Logan. So what else are you looking at? What other economic factors or data is important right now?
Well, the tracker, by the time this podcast comes out, we're going to see, you know, for me, it's, you know, I'm such a pro supply person that I'm just loving the fact that the people that were talking about mortgage rate lockdowns and inventory can't grow with higher. Oh, sorry, Sarah. We're getting some year-over-year growth on inventory. We're getting some year-over-year growth in new listings. No, nothing spectacular. But I'm loving it. Like, if I could get back to 2019 levels, I'm loving it. Like, I love all the housing markets that are back at 2019 levels, because that to me is balance. My concern is always, this is the same concern back in 2022, was that inventory levels, we all can see what happened last year, even with mortgage rates between 6 to 8%, home prices rose. But if inventory is not growing and all of a sudden rates come back down, we're back to that savagely unhealthy housing market again. And that I don't want that. So I am so happy that we're seeing inventory growth, and it's all pretty normal looking, right, in scale terms. And again, I always try to emphasize, because we're starting to distribute this information out to people too, so we could teach people this. From 2008 to 2011, the new listings data per week were running at 250 to 400,000 per week, right? That was a tsunami. Right, we're still like at 30 to 90K. So that, and also just one thing, for I'm hearing all these things about, well, all these people that just bought homes and home prices go down, they're going to sell their homes at 30-40% off. Homie, listen, this is not the stock market. If home prices come down below the debt, it's called a short sale. You know, you can't just sell your house like that. It doesn't work. This is why the housing market is much different than stocks. So we're trying to get people versed, you know, to move at the next stage of the economic cycle, because that's hopefully, it doesn't happen anytime soon. But when the recession happens, we have to get people into how to talk about housing economics during a recession, especially with low inventory and low sales. And traditionally what happens is rates go lower. That means demands pick up. Is there enough people losing their jobs to offset the 157 million people, you know, in the workforce that now have lower rates? We'll cross that bridge when we get there, but not yet. So the tracker, inventory, active inventory, new listings data, price cut percentages. It's a much more balanced market this year than last year, where last year inventory was still falling all the way to April 14th. I'm like, God, that's not what we want.
When you say those numbers from 2008, that's just shocking. Like, did you say 250,000 to 400,000 homes were being listed per week?
Yeah, per week, new listings data. Now, these are the homes that go into inventory that doesn't have it's not in contract, so there's no demand there. That's unfettered inventory. That's why it was just like, you know, prices were really collapsing back then. You know, I did a week to week inventory data lines. I kind of taunt some people that do 2008. It's like, this week back in 2011, 369,000 homes came to the market. You know, and then now 51,000. You know, so it's stuff like that to give people some perspective, because again, we don't have the 2008 credit market anymore. So inventory channels are going to work differently. Now that we're in 2024, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, this is my period in time, okay? This is my baby. So what have we seen? The ability for inventory to escalate out of control is very limited, especially when we're in an expansion. So now, hopefully, now that we're in March, we can understand this a little bit better, and it starts to make sense. Back then, totally different. We had 4 years, two, three, four, 4 years of credit stress buildup. Then after that, the job loss recession happened. None of that action's happening right now, right? So you can't just, you know, put a model in there that doesn't work, right? You have to teach people how to read the data, but also explain it. Like I'm all about the why first, then the final answer.
So, I mean, the other thing is, if we don't have the job loss recession, if we have those low jobless claims, right, that means that, like, why would people be selling, you know, even if their house goes down or whatever? It's like, if you bought a house to live in, which under qualified mortgage rules, most people now, you know, if they have investment homes, it's because they can afford to buy those. But, like, if you don't lose your job, why would you be selling at a loss?
You know, they're... part of the debate with the gentleman was that he was saying that food costs are like at 30-year highs, the cost of food per, you know, disposable income has actually been falling for decades. So it is a valid thesis. So this is actually one thing for everyone to think about. When you buy a house 10 years ago, your wages rise, rates have gone down, you refinance, your cash flow is so good that if your home insurance went up, you know, dramatically in 1 year, you have a better way of dealing with that. But if most sellers, 75 to 82%, sell their homes, so you're saying that somebody has a problem here, but if they sold their house, bought a higher price home with higher rates and higher insurance, they're going to do better in that? No. So these people are doing really well. That's why you don't see a lot of sellers. Are there people out there that home insurance, they can't get it, they need to sell it? Absolutely. Are there people that lose their jobs every single month? Yes, they do. It happens every week. People lose their jobs and some people have to sell their homes. But we're talking about scale, right? And we have not seen scale inventory increases really since post 2010. So wait for the job loss recession, wait for jobless claims, then we could go into that, right? But the inventory growth we're seeing right now is, compared to everything else, it's pretty limited, but still it's growing positive. Love it. But you know, it's not what I would call major stress. That's why I always like to focus people on the new listings data. We had a recent period in time where we saw stress. We just don't see that right now. In fact, if anything, I'm a little bit disappointed on the new listings data growth this year, even though it's positive and it's picking up and with higher rates, it should pick up more because those homes don't go into contract right away. It's a little bit lower for my taste at this point.
So I'm glad that you brought up the insurance cost, because that is one of those variables that could have a huge impact. It is still, you know, limited in the sense of, like, out of all the homes, you know, it's definitely having an impact in Florida. It could have an impact in California. So, I mean, that's something we're keeping a really close eye on as a newsroom and reporting out and looking at and, you know, talking to people about, because that it has a potential to be something big that could affect things.
It does, but here's another way to look at it. So let's assume my insurance costs $1,500 a year. Average that out for 12 payments. my insurance cost goes up from $1,500 to $3,000, right? So it's a double. It's a big thing. When you divide that in the monthly expenses, I always say that's like two DoorDash dinners for me. So do I lose
my... I think so. I mean, that's like, that's a lot of money. I mean, that's not just two DoorDash dinners, but yeah,
It is. I don't know what you order on DoorDash, but for me it is. Okay. So,
but you're in Southern California.
Yeah, Southern California. That's us. But I mean, think about it. There are things you can do to keep your house, right? You know, so people don't go, oh my God, my insurance, let's go sell. And so just think about it in that light, that there are levers to pull. Now, I would say insurance in Florida is different because you're skyrocketing and some people just literally can't get insurance. That's a problem. Right. Literally, you can't get a loan if you can't get insurance. So those issues, I would make sense. But sometimes I think we don't think about this too much. And, you know, part of the reasons why, like California, you can get insurance in California most of the time because of the law we have here. But the people, why aren't people selling to rush? Their total housing costs are low. They can do things to keep their house. Remember, your home is where the heart is. So that one is going to be like the thing that you're going to hold on to. You know, do you need 25 subscriptions out there? You know, do you need to buy X here? So remember, just the cash flow situation is good for homeowners. So if you're a little bit shocked why inventory is skyrocketing because of insurance, just remember that factor. And it's going to be a very, like I always say, Florida is a good test case because people literally can't get insurance, and that's a whole different, and the condos there are the underfunding of condos and the fact that they have laws in there to make sure they're funded. If those insurance costs goes up with higher rates, then you know the buyer of a home gets impacted more than maybe a seller, because that buyer has to pay. And then to offset that, if you don't get lower rates, you most likely have to cut prices to make it to sell the product. So just don't make it such a clean cut. Insurance costs will go up. Everyone's poor and broke. That typically isn't the best way to look at it. And we've shown this for 14 years, especially with homeowners, right? Their cash flows are very good. I would argue the best ever. And a lot of them have been living in their homes longer and longer. So their total wages where they are now compared to all these lower costs of debt. So it gives them a little bit more cushion than people think.
I think it's a good point. You always point to monthly costs. I think that's the loan officer, former loan officer in you, where you're like, listen, if you put that out monthly, what does that mean? Your payment's still very doable. So thank you for that perspective. And thanks for talking about the other things too. You know, my fingers are crossed that no, the opposite of raising rates, no way do they raise rates, you know, hoping that rates go down
Wall
more.
Wall Street is a little bit nervous, Sarah. You could see these guys squirming. No, rate hikes. We have to do rate hikes. When are we going to forecast rate hikes? Or no, we can't cut rates. The economy's good. So I would say the ones that are saying you can't cut rates because the economy's booming, when they said we're in a recession 12 months ago, that's frustration, Sarah. That's a big whiff.
Thank you, Logan, as always. And we will talk to you again soon.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.